Hello, no. I'm not introducing it
Not
this week. One of you two do it.
it.
All
All
right then, I'll do it. Ian, go. You've got a sexy voice.
Right. Shit. Okay, give me
Great
one
start. Great
second.
start.
Hello and welcome to XP Grind on Segment Next.
Is that
I'm
how I
good.
sound?
No.
Yep.
No.
Are you mocking me?
Hello, Segment Next. Go. Okay. Oh. Hello and welcome to SegmentNext.com's XP Grind podcast with your host, Liam Stanway, and special guests, Ian Towers, and I've forgotten the fucking name of the other guest.
Joseph Bentley.
I hate you already.
Do you
Right.
want me to do that again?
No, try
Hello!
again. That's all staying in. Right from
Oh,
the
you've
start.
got to
This
be
is.
kidding me.
No, whole thing. Right. Anyway.
It's
All
better
right.
how you do it, Liam, so that's fine.
Shut up.
Liam, when you screw it up, you get a retake. All
Yeah,
right,
I'm the
well.
one recording it. I'm the
Ah,
editor.
well.
I'm the god of this podcast.
No, don't fuck with God.
No, don't fuck with God. Anyway, welcome to the XP Grind podcast.
Hello.
Hi.
This week we've got Ian with us again and Joe Bentley.
Hello. That's
Joseph,
me.
hi. And she doesn't know it, but we also secretly have Ian's girlfriend Chaz with us.
In the background somewhere, she can't hear us.
This is
She's
some new
being
level
pressed
of
black and white too. She doesn't give a shit.
weirdness.
Anyway, you're listening to the XP Grind podcast, hosted exclusively on segmentnext.com. And this week we have Joe and Ian with us, and we're going to talk about the news.
The news, really? Again?
News.
Yeah.
I thought this time we weren't going to talk about the news.
I
I
thought
thought
this
this
time there
was.
was going to be a fair, but someone lied to me as well.
I was told there'd be cookies.
There are.
Really?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Dibs.
Oh, damn it. Someone called dibs.
I called dibs.
Right.
We don't have Ethan with us this week because he's busy working. And this episode's a day late because of terrible, terrible recordings. But, bollocks to that. On with the news.
One of the big things is at the moment is what do you call it? The Steam sale is everyone's been expecting it to happen since the 28th or
Yeah,
30th, because last year it happened on the 30th, didn't it?
we're now into the 30th and still no sale.
I'm really annoyed
Yeah.
about
Then again, as we are recording now, it is 20 to 6, and usually the deadline for all the days is always they always start a new day at 6 o'clock in the evening for some reason.
6 o'clock
So.
in the evening over here in the UK.
Yeah, over here in the UK,
Yes.
because naturally it's all in America. It does make sense, but yeah. So hopefully, in 20 minutes, we'll find out if the Steam sale is on.
If there is, you'll get a live reaction from us.
Yes, and
Yeah.
we'll all stop the podcast straight away to start buying games.
You can. If you can do that, I make no money. And I
Yeah,
already have 200 Steam games, and I need to finish those before I buy any more.
I have
Stop
about the same.
going. Stop going on about how much you get paid, Liam.
No, I don't get paid a lot. I just lost one of my jobs. Shut up.
Probably because you went on about how much you didn't get paid.
Shut up.
This is the stab at Liam version of the podcast.
Life is the stab at Liam version of the podcast.
Life is a podcast.
Also big in the news, I think the leaked FF7 document outlining a bunch of details of the FF7 remake, but apparently that's been confirmed as not happening now by Square.
Yeah, the Final Fantasy document. They don't want to remake FF7 until they've topped, with air quotes there, topped the original because they think it would end the FF
Oh
franchise,
yeah, I
which
can
is
kind of
bullshit.
understand where they're coming from. You wouldn't want to just remake something when you could just do up the original. Plus, I'm not really bothered about Final Fantasy VII. I know that's gonna cause a lot of hatred on my part, but 8's always been the best.
Sorry, 10's the
10's
best.
great, but 8's the best.
Yeah, so they want to try and top what is basically a meme engine on the internet because you're never going to be short of kids who think it's a brilliant game when we all know that 10 is the best.
If by 10 you mean 8, then yeah, sure.
It's not. You can't top something like that at this point.
Yeah, it
no.
you can't try to fix. Don't fix something that ain't broke. Basically,
it's like trying to reinvent the wheel. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, with Activision, they'll be like, sure, we'll release another game in the next 4 months. But like Square Enix are definitely like, the game is good. Just if you really want to play it that badly, get some mods, get it on PC, and just play it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I don't see anything wrong. I've played a little bit of Final Fantasy VII. I haven't actually played it and completed it. Feel free to, you know, light the torches and sharpen the pitchforks and come after me. But I haven't managed to get around to playing it and completing it. But I've got to the Shinra building, and, like, the game is nice enough in itself, and it's novel in its own way.
I've not finished it myself. I'm fairly sure I might be cursed. I play it on PC, and without fail, every time I've got to just before the Sacred Forest on disc one, my game has crashed, and then my PC will break, and I've had to replace parts. Every time. I just sort of gave up on playing it.
It hates you, and it's at least me, sure.
Yeah, I don't want to be rebuilding a PC just for that. So, FF7 aside, what else has happened? Pyromania was this week.
I really haven't got into TF2 enough to know about this that much. Describe!
I loved it. I mean, everyone's been so psyched and has been shouting at Valve to release it. I swear people have wanted this almost as much as Half-Life 3. But when it did came out, I was just glad, because everybody was wondering what was under the mask, and we got a little insight, which was really funny. And as always with the Meet the videos, it's brilliant. And apparently the mask is also available as an unlock.
Pyrovision is available. For anyone who's not watched it yet, they've just released Meet the Pyro, and we actually get to see just how the Pyro sees the world.
Oh, also, did you hear with the big news of the Pyromania coming out? Steam have also released their... I cannot remember the name of...
Source Filmmaker.
And
yeah.
And you can capture actual in-engine gameplay. And then what you can do with Filmmaker is you can edit all of the animations in the engine. So you can basically toy around with a capture of the entire, you know, piece of game that you've just recorded with Filmmaker.
Yeah, that's
it's
really
a new
good.
Level of Machinima interaction. And I imagine Machinima.com is going to be flooded with loads of Team Fortress 2 ones. They've already updated the Meet the Heavy, because you get an example of you know, Source Filmmaker project, and they give you all of the original animations and audio for Meet the Heavy, and it's all set up in a project waiting for you to toy with it. And someone has mounted it, filled it with hats, and put loads of hats all over the Heavy, and changed the Sasha, the minigun, to the one with Christmas lights wrapped around it. So it's pretty funny, and at the end he's got like a huge amount of hats on his head whilst he's shooting everyone at the end of the Meet the Heavy video. So it was pretty funny to see that. Someone posted it saying, updated for more modern TF2.
Yeah, the Filmmaker's quite cool. I've played around a tiny little bit.
It's in beta. If you guys want to get in on it, what you got to do is you got to scream at Valve for an invite. It should be in one of your beta opt-in things. But yeah, I can't wait to see. Like, it's already come off really well. Like I said, the stuff I've seen is brilliant that people have done, and I cannot wait until it explodes. When it comes out of beta, we're gonna see so much awesome coming from the Valve Source Engine now. I think it's gonna add a new shine to the terribly edited Garry's Mod videos.
Oh god, yes.
Finally, Garry's Mod videos will be done right.
Yeah, they will. But back to the Pyromania update itself for TF2. The new Meet the Pyro video that everyone's been waiting on for so long showed us just how the Pyro sees the world. He sees it in what has been playfully dubbed Pyrovision. Whilst the Pyro may be running at you, shooting fire at you. From his point of view, he's firing lovely rainbows. If you've not watched it, pause this, go watch it now, because it's brilliant. And it's exactly what we wanted all along, other than, you know, its gender and identity.
I will admit.
But if you log into TF2 between until the 5th of July, you get a new... It's a miscellaneous item. You get a new item. When it's equipped, you see all your games in Pyrovision, which is really cool, because instead of smoke effects on rockets and flares, there's bubbles. People bleed like party streamers and balloons. Health pickups become cake.
That sounds great.
It's all of my classes have Pyrovision equipped, except my soldier, because it clashes with me.
I have to get in on this.
I'm going to have to re-download Team Fortress 2. I deleted it to save 10 gigs of space on my hard drive. I really needed that 10 gig.
Do I still have it?
But yeah, Pyromania. It's finally come to a draw. We've seen all the new weapons. Scout, Demo, and Sniper have all got fun little things to play with. The Pyro's got two weapons that are only visual upgrades and can only be seen whilst you're in Pyrovision.
There's also a couple of, I think, game modes and maps coming out.
Yeah, there's the new Doomsday map, which has a combination of Capture the Flag and Payload as its game mode. It's quite weird.
Capture the Flag and Payload?
Yeah, basically there is a neutral briefcase thing on the map, and you need to take it from the enemy, or they need to take it from you, or whatever. And then you've got to get it to the top of a slow-moving elevator, and then get it to the rocket that's got to be fired. And that's the whole objective of the map, getting the fuel to the rocket to fire it. So you've got to stand on this elevator with the... I can't remember what it is. I've not played the map myself yet. I've been busy playing Pipeline. But you've got to get... Got to go up this slow elevator, so you need to be dodging people firing at you from all angles. It looks fun. I'm probably going to play it at some point this week.
Yeah. Oh, well, we're moving over to consoles. Nintendo, apparently, Reggie is from Nintendo, is apparently really concerned lately with their response from Pikmin and their new Mario game that they've been pitching.
I don't know how to feel about this.
But the thing is, with the response people have got, it's another Mario game. And I mean, I know it sounds like, you can feel free to stab at me, but Mario has been done over 400,000 times in many different ways. And every time Nintendo does something new with it, people are like, well, why are you doing this? Make better games.
Well, Mario is really hard to judge really objectively, because think about it, for a lot of people, he's the daddy of gaming, yeah. Mario.
He's the core selling aspect of Nintendo consoles as well.
Yeah, but when you consider he's such a veteran, when a new Mario game gets announced, it's the kind of thing where you'd sort of expect people to be all like, oh, new Mario game, yeah! But in reality, they're all like, oh, look, another Mario game.
Because,
and no one gets hyped.
Sheer amount of them. So many.
Yeah, it's the sheer amount of releases and the kind of content they put in those releases, you know, has affected people's opinion on Mario, the modern Mario. Because, I mean, if you really want to play a good Mario game, just play some of the old ones like Mario 64 and, you know, Super Mario World on the SNES. That's a good Mario game. So, I mean, with good games like that, I mean... And especially with them, you know, certain Mario games being remade, re-released on the 3DS, re-released on, you know, Virtual Console on the Nintendo Wii. It's just, you know, kind of adding more filler to a pile that some people just don't want anymore. I think Nintendo really needs to stop branching out a lot more. But, I mean, this Wii U console that they're doing is definitely going to have some interesting results, because I hope that they really, really go to town with this. Because, I mean, the Wii U version of Mario that they're going to release, which will happen, because, I mean, we can't deny that that's going to happen. But when we see a Wii U release of Mario, hopefully they'll start breaking into a new revolution of how to play using the Wii U controller. And hell, it might be just another good milestone in Mario games.
Hopefully.
The thing is with Mario, though, it's like it's their low-risk, fail-safe game. It's just easy to put out one every few months. It's what they seem to be doing, and it's just something that's always going to fetch people interested.
Yeah, I've got two more on the way now. If you include New Super Mario Brothers 2? I don't know. There's New Super Mario Brothers Wii U, New Super Mario Brothers Wii, New Super Mario Brothers, far too many syllables.
New Super Mario Brothers Wii U 7, Bowser goes on a field trip.
Platinum Edition.
Platinum Edition on the Virtual Console and the 3DS.
Collector's
with
Edition.
Free pre-order for the next Mario game we're coming out with, which will be out in another month. At least it's not as terrible as the Modern Warfare franchise.
Yeah, at least it has the playability.
I love a game every 12 months that's exactly the same.
Yeah. Any other news? Oh, there's more Nintendo news, apparently. Oh, yes, the 3DS XL is coming.
Yes, the 3DS XL, where the screen is twice
and
as big.
And it doesn't have a second analog stick.
No. You have to buy that separately, don't you?
Yep.
Doing this.
They said that the 3D looks enhanced on it, but Nintendo responded with that as just saying, well, it's got a bigger screen because it's going to look better.
I don't know why Nintendo has gone peripheral crazy. Because, I mean, the best, the most... The...
Wait, they've ever been not peripheral
no,
crazy?
No, the one time they had it locked down and good was down in the N64 days when they had the Rumble Pack, they had the controllers, and they released different color controllers, a wide range of different color controllers, which almost became collectibles in the end of the day. Because the Nintendo 64 boomed in popularity as a console, people started collecting more and more controllers because, you know, you had four ports, so it was pretty good because, like, you wanted a wide variety of controllers for that. And then also they had the memory add-on, which was optional for a lot of games, but necessary for some. But it wasn't too, you know, out of budget. It was important for some games, and it was worth it in the end of the day. So, and I mean, they didn't release a huge amount of peripherals like they're doing now, because let's take the analog stick. Like, imagine it in the N64 days. They've gone, let's take one of the, like, say, let's take the D-pad off and leave you with just the analog stick. But you have to buy the extra side of the controller to use the D-pad. It's kind of like that, and I don't understand why Nintendo were doing that. It's one thing that's been massively highlighted by gamers, and it just doesn't make sense. It's just, why don't they use that extra space? Instead of just adding huge screen, just add the extra analog stick. People will play it.
It's the exact same as the DLC argument.
Yeah. And I mean, I didn't expect it from Nintendo. But...
Really?
No. But...
I've been a Nintendo fanboy since I was about 5. And I've gone through everything, even with the N64, and it was like, you need a transfer pack and a rumble pack per controller. And then the GameCube, you need this uplink cable for your GBA, and then you need this to go online, and you need this and this and this. And you need this to play your Game Boy games on it, and so on and so forth.
Put a lot more thought into it. It was the same with all the consoles. It's always been kind of peripheral crazy. I mean, apart from, you know, like the Game Boy days where, you know, you just needed...
You had a Game Boy, games, and batteries.
And batteries, yeah.
Millions of batteries. How many gamers have spent more money on batteries than they have on games?
At a push, you had a Game Boy camera, which was pitiful, in all honesty.
I had a Game Boy camera and a Game Boy printer.
Yeah. The printer.
Why?
In fact, my Game Boy printer still works.
Yeah, the people are still releasing the paper for that. Look it up, you can get it somewhere. Probably online. Oh, and also though,
the internet.
Alongside that, apparently there's a new Super Smash Bros. Game.
Yes, which is being developed by Namco Bandai, which was a bit confusing.
Yeah, but I mean, oh yeah.
I wonder if it's in response to that PlayStation All-Stars thing. Like, no, it's our thing. We're taking that.
PlayStation All-Stars does sound really good. And everyone on Reddit, when it was first announced, everyone on Reddit was like, "Oh, this is what I want to see." And everybody's been posting up old Sony characters and just slapping huge amounts of characters up. And hopefully they'll have a big list of people. Big list of characters.
Well, I'm hoping that the major reason that they've got an outside team to do it is so that the team outside Nintendo can actually focus on looking at the IPs and the available characters rather than saying, right, we need to get this done as fast as possible because the in-house development teams have got other games to be working on. So if Namco are doing it, I don't reckon there's going to be representation from other games because Namco tend to be the ones who publish, you know, anime games, Dragon Ball Z, Soul Calibur, that kind of thing. So I don't reckon there'll be representation from their games, but I reckon we'll see a lot more obscure Nintendo characters just because they've got people to sit down and go through everything and figure out who would be a better fit, who's going to make a decent rival, who will work with the theme, who won't, who can they change enough to work with the theme without sacrificing the character.
A lot of R&D in that, a lot of R&D.
Yeah, there's more R&D in disseminating Nintendo games than people give it credit.
It's just a shame that game developers still go on, even what you're saying about R&D, it's still a big shame that even if the R&D is good, it only goes so far when it comes to QA, but at the moment, all of the developers tend to go with the waterfall style of game development, which is basically, we'll develop most of it, and then we'll test it, and then we'll only make minor tweaks. But instead of basically just waterfalling it, which is, you know, just everything in order, you know how you like bake a cake, you just put, you know, an all-in-one cake, you just put everything in order, one by one, into the pot, bake it, and it's done. But what it should be, which nobody, not a lot of people have taken it on yet, but people that have done it right, I mean, it's massively expensive, and that's the main reason why it is mainstream. But what they should do is they should keep going back to the QA and they should keep testing the game and they should tear out half the game if people find it crap. If people don't like it, they should tear out half the game. But nobody's willing to do that because it wastes money and it is really expensive. But it does mean a better designed game.
A lot of indie developers do that, don't they?
Yeah, a lot of indie developers, especially with the crowdsourcing. One of the brilliant parts about crowdsourcing, you know, with Double Fine's adventure game, what they're doing is, what's brilliant about that is that they've cut out the publisher control, which is brilliant. So they've put the publisher as the consumer essentially. So basically the consumer is in control. But what's also is the consumer is the target audience anyway. So all of the investment from the consumer was the target audience. And because they promised that they'd release regular updates and have community decisions based on features of the game, so basically, they'll have community influence and polls to decide things. Essentially, it's becoming like the community-made mods where, you know, say a list of popular mod, I don't know, like a list of popular mod for a game that's been developed by a community.
Popular game developed by the community.
DayZ for Arma 2. The bloke that does that, he's listening to regular feedback and changing features based on that. But a lot of developers nowadays, they don't do that, which is a shame. But the thing is, they still make so much money, which is, you know, it's just one of the things that, you know, designers all bitch about. But at the end of the day, if it makes money, they'll sell it. And that's why Activision makes a lot of money off Modern Warfare. I seem to have gone off on a tangent.
I like to say that there's been a lot of news this week, and there has. I just don't think there's been a lot that's really worth discussing too much. We've had a Nintendo Direct, but all we got out of that was a release date for Black and White 2, the 3DS XL announcement.
It's coming out in the fall, Black and White 2 is.
It's like October, isn't it? Something like that. I heard October somewhere.
Apparently.
I was writing about it the other day, and I've literally already forgotten.
Pre-orders have already hit 1 million.
That doesn't surprise me.
Which...
That's the thing. Someone pointed out that people in Japan preferred black version to white version by not a huge amount, but significant enough to notice.
It's always going to be like 49-51%, something like that, isn't it?
No, more like 60-40.
Oh, well.
It's like there was 100,000 more orders of black than there were of white, and I think there's been 20,000 more orders of Black 2 than White 2.
But yeah, in I guess based on what you were saying about not being too much news, there is some news in the form of in Notch's world. Apparently, Scrolls, there's a trailer coming out for Scrolls, which is new.
Oh, that's already out.
Yeah. It's, yeah,
that's actually, sorry. Yeah,
there is a trailer out for Scrolls. Forgive my lingo.
Yeah, this is going up in, well, this podcast is going up in a few hours, so no need to talk in the future.
Yeah, yeah. But also, what do you call it? It's going to have like a Diablo 3 style
auction house.
Yeah. Oh,
that kind of
yeah,
bothers me. It's not going to be real money. It's going to be completely player driven. But
it's not complete.
Don't put things in the hands of players. Bad things happen when you put things in the hands of players.
Thank you.
It needs very strict moderation. Everything does. Don't give people power.
It's not going to be a pay to win, though, is it? Really, is Diablo?
No,
I think it's going to be, though, kind of a new stigma in games, this auction house stuff, if it kicks off. I really don't want it to be, but it could be one of these things, because it might be tapped into the mass. It might be a new feature that taps into the PC market, because of the massively multiplayer online games that are available on PC. And, you know, the interactivity, because, I mean, people on PC, you know, they make a lot of purchases on like online distribution, like things. Like, I mean, let's say on a console, you're making purchases through Xbox Live or you're making them through PlayStation Network. But on PC, you'd make a lot of purchases through good old games, through Steam, through Gamersgate, which, you know, is delivery. But I mean, you make a lot of online purchases on the PC. So, I mean, it's a good way to tap into that and add it into a game. So you can make online purchases in your game, but it's, I don't like the auction house idea of selling items off to other people for real money and turning. It's like a pay to win nightmare, like you said, Liam.
Joe said it.
Don't
confuse me with him.
You wish.
Yeah, he's way better than you, Liam.
Yay!
Next week you will. Well, starting next week, you're never going to see these two.
I
again.
Will regret my decision immediately. Go on, you know you love me, Liam. I'll be back at some point.
Yeah, if people didn't like you so much.
Big news, Dawn Guard is out. Why is it out on PC? Why has it been delayed for a month? I don't like it.
So moving on to new releases. Yeah, Dawn Guard's out. And it's Xbox exclusive. And that's really pissing off Ian.
Yeah.
Like it. What was the point in delaying it for PC players?
I believe most of the point is that they've started development of the DLC late, and they haven't bothered learning how to port it.
It's had a lot of really like bad reviews, hasn't it? Though,
if you try and look at things from Bethesda's perspective, it might be because Steam Workshop brings a lot of compatibility issues to the PC version, so it almost makes it a very difficult development for Skyrim, because they have to put massive consideration for all of the mods that are currently there. Because what they could do is they could test Dawn Guard as a direct port to vanilla. I'm going to say it thousands of times. As a, you know, they would have tested it on vanilla Skyrim, because that's what's available on the Xbox part, bar all of the patches. But they'll test it on that, and then they'll bring it to the PC, and they'll find that all of the Steam Workshop stuff might break half of Dawn Guard, and they might find Skyrim not able to load. So I think that extra month is to bring out a lot of compatibility issues and iron out a lot of game breaking issues that Steam Workshop brings to the table. So I'd be willing to wait that month, but it's still nail biting whilst everyone's going, "Oh, I'm going to be on the Dawn Guard. Oh, I'm going to be a vampire." God damn it. I can't wait to play it.
I can. I want to start a new game on Skyrim, so this extra month of waiting is giving me time to find that.
Yeah.
Well, it's giving me time to find the time, to spend the time playing it.
Are we?
I could do with starting it again, because I kind of like faded out of it when other games came out. It was like a massive hype like at the start, and I know people still play it a lot, and I wish I did, but I just don't. Now Dawn Guard's out, I might actually pick it back up.
I always try to avoid starting a new character in RPGs so early. Like, I always try to have a main character and ride it out for as long and, you know, try and complete as much as I can in the RPG, because then the experience isn't linked, because, you know, your experience is linked to your character. Say, like, if you start out a character that's like an archer warrior, or you start a new character a couple of months after and you start out as a mage, you know, you'll lock memories of unlocking like new things to each character, and I prefer to have those memories as to one character so that I'm a little bit more immersed. It breaks the immersion of the game for me.
That's how an RPG is intended to be played. You're meant to have some sort of connection and attachment to your character, really, aren't you?
Yeah, but after, you know, several years, like in Oblivion, after several years of it already being out, I tend to fall into that rhythm of, it tends to get stagnating after, you know, you've done all the main quests and some of the major side quests, like, you know, Thieves Guild and stuff like that. So once you've done all the major side quests, then it starts to stagnate a little bit in terms of experience, and you find it harder to immerse. So what you do is you kind of start again and go, oh, I'll be a mage this time and I'll do all spells and whatnot. So, I mean, I end up doing it anyway, and I will do with Skyrim eventually. I probably might start an evil vampire character just so that I can check out the cool new features in Dawnguard. But I'll probably be sticking with my main for now. And I'll join the Dawn Guard when the DLC is out. Oh yes, what factions? What sides are you going to pick, guys? Liam,
I don't know yet.
Really, don't like vampires.
No, I'm not a fan.
Just the culture behind them has gotten to the point where I just couldn't care less anymore. I don't care if this is like proper vampire lord shit, whatever. I'm probably going to go. I'm just going to go hunter. I'm going to go around kicking their asses, and then I'm going to turn into a werewolf.
Yeah, I think...
And then I'm going to be angry at myself because I'm a fucking furry.
I think I'd go down the same route, really. I mean, I hate how vampires in the game, in the main Skyrim game, just get attacked just randomly by anyone. I mean, a vampire is just... It's intended to be like a dark, mysterious creature. They're just... It's meant to blend into society, and as soon as you go into like a town or somewhere, everyone instinctively knows what and who you are.
That's my favorite.
Your skin's a bit pale.
Quick,
yeah. Stop it, guys. Skin's pale. Go get him. Like, they call out everyone as well. It's like you're instantly vilified for it. It's like in Oblivion when you stole a horse. It was just as bad as killing somebody. So when you stole a horse, like people would actively track you down and try. You'd be chased out of the city. I'm like, I know it's still stealing, but. Whew. It was crazy insane. It's quite interesting though that you guys are picking the Dawn Guard mainly because you don't like vampires or don't want to be a vampire. But the main reason I'm picking it is actually because my character sides with good. My character's actually like a neutral good character. I've done some evil stuff. Like I helped the guys in Markarth. Oh, then again, I shouldn't really spoil the side quest. Spoiler alert: cover your ears for the next 5 seconds. But the guys with like things on their heads and like they're tribal, and you let them run riot in Markarth. Yeah, I enjoyed that. But anyhow, yes, moving on. There's got to be more releases than Dawn Guard.
Amazing Spider-Man came out yesterday.
Ooh,
and.
I love how
it's a Spider-Man game with quick time events.
Oh, God.
I love how they've got Stan Lee as a extra character. Just play as Stan Lee. Some of the quotes he comes out of is just hilarious.
Stan Lee has always been good for video game quotes. As a video game voiceover. Stan Lee's always been brilliant.
He's no Stephen Bloom.
Oh yeah, I remember playing Spider-Man 2. That was the best superhero game I've played yet, purely for the open world.
Spider-Man on the Dreamcast was one of my favorite games. I believe it was also on the PlayStation, or PlayStation 2. But yeah, I remember the Spider-Man game on the Dreamcast, and that was my favorite.
Best superhero game I've ever played was Freedom Force versus the Third Reich.
Best superhero game I ever played was Superman 64.
And kicked. And
say that, I'm joking. I couldn't even make that joke without causing some kind of brain pain on myself.
What other new releases been out this week? Spec Ops The Line, if you're into dull brown military shooters.
I played the demo of that, it just wasn't great.
I'm wearing a Spec Ops The Line shirt as we speak, and even I feel a little bit disgusted with myself.
Just spill some pizza on it, it'd be fine.
I'm just going to go rub a pizza all over myself.
If you've got any objections, feel free to comment on the XP Grind podcast on the site.
Yeah, go for it. You're not going to change my mind. It's a dull brown military shooter.
Is there...
Like, all of them.
You know, what makes it unique? Has anyone looked into it? What?
I played a whole 5 minutes of it, and it's brown. You shoot stuff. And military is mentioned.
Yeah, what really annoyed me about it...
don't seem to follow any semblance, but...
It's all... All military shooters are, like, running, going, like, yeah, burst in, let's kill everyone because we're action commandos and what have you. But some of them has allow you to take, like, a stealthy approach. At least at first, you can take out, like, one or two guys just instantly and let no one else notice. On that demo, you cannot. You can walk up to someone who's got their back towards you, and you're about, what, 10 feet away, and they'll just turn around and start shooting you. Just instantly, it drives me nuts.
Yeah, I always hated it when detection was like that. I don't understand why they don't use proper detection. Like, my favorite game for enemy detection was Commandos, Behind Enemy Lines, if anyone's ever played it.
No.
Got it in the sequence.
For those of you that haven't, listeners, it was a 2D top-down kind of real-time tactics game where you controlled a small elite commando unit that and you perform several missions behind enemy lines. And what was interesting was all of the patrolling Germans on it, because it was mainly against the Germans, the Nazis in World War II. But one of the brilliant things was if you turned on one of the cheats, you could see the view ranges of the enemies, and they were really well thought out because there was like a field of view that they could see. And it was pretty interesting to have some nail-biting moments when you thought, oh, crap, did the guy see me? Then, you know, and when you just, like, instantly hid behind a boulder just as they come around the corner. And when they do see you, it's kind of suspenseful to try and get out of their line of sight and get hidden as soon as possible. So I don't understand when games, like, implement such a terrible, you know, detection system where they just turn around and they know you're there. Like, and what's worse is that again, breaks your immersion because you realize you're playing a shit game when that kind of happens. Because you realize, why did that happen? This is unfair. It's not. It's funny because, like, when you play games, you do unrealistic activities. But in a game, if
as we've talked about with you robbing banks and thinking how much better you could do it.
Yeah, but you perform unrealistic activities. But when something unrealistic happens in the game that kind of puts you at a fault, it kind of breaks your immersion and you start to hate the game, which is kind of.
It's uncool.
Spoils the illusion.
Definitely play the Spec Ops The Line just to, if there is one, just to find out how crap it really is, if you say so, Liam. Or is it even worth my time?
I played at the Gadget Show, which is where I got this shirt I'm wearing.
Ah, cool.
And it's just, it wasn't fun. It was an over-the-shoulder shooter. It was brown, it was dull. Something apocalyptic had happened.
Basically,
oh, God. I can name 20 different modern FPSs off the top of my head with that exact story.
Go for it, now.
No. Actually, let me just open my Steam game list. There's at least 10 in here.
That could be the next competition. To see the first person to comment and list 20 different ones gets a prize.
Oh, you fuck it. If you're listening to this podcast, list 10 games that fit that description. Brown, dull, apocalyptic. And it has to be an FPS, it has to be a military FPS at that. Name 10 games like that, I will send you a free game. I don't even care what it is, I don't care what the platform is, I will send you a free game.
It has
game.
To be genuinely dull.
Yeah, if I liked it, no chance.
It's been awesome, like Fallout 3, because that was apocalyptic, but awesome. And I will kill anybody that says otherwise.
Joe's been attacked by the curse of the haunted vagina that takes away your microphone quality suddenly.
What?
Oh, God.
For those of you that haven't listened to the last episode, the haunted vagina is a joke, and I'm not just pulling shit out of my arse. Okay, I just sound really stupid. Let's ignore I said any of that. So are the releases...
Weren't we supposed to be giving this to, like, an accessible audience?
You're an accessible
Your face looks like an accessible audience.
Can I just add to that last part? I just know that if someone does get them 10 correctly, you're going to send them one of the shit games. Because that's just what you do.
The wooden spoon prize.
Irony, you wouldn't spec up the line.
You shouldn't have said that joke, because now Liam's just gone rats, they're on to me.
What are the releases? Have there been this
week? I saw Project Zero 2 got released on the Wii. They've remade that. Oh, I loved that game when it came out of PlayStation. It was the true definition of scary, because it wasn't jumpy like all scary films and games are now. It actually made me not want to sleep at night, which is, funnily enough, the only time I played it. And I was 12, but still. And now they've remade it for the Wii. I really want to play it, but I really hate the fact that they haven't held out for the Wii U, because it seems such an ideal game for the Wii U. Whether this is to just entice people back into the Project Zero, Fatal Frame franchise to get them geared up for one they might release on the Wii U, I don't know, but it seems something that would be absolutely perfect for it.
Just run that by me. What game did you say that was?
Project Zero, or Fatal Frame, whichever region you're from.
Frame? Well, they brought it out on the Wii?
Project Zero 2, they redid it for the Wii.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It actually looks pretty refined, pretty good, but...
It's got quite a bit of viral attention as one of these... Because you know, it's how, like, Amnesia has gone a little bit viral with, you must play this because it will make you shit yourself. Apparently, Zero is basically, like, RPGs and JRPGs. Basically, Project Zero is the JRPG to Amnesia's being the RPG. Apparently, it's the Japanese equivalent.
One day, I will understand why people play horror games.
Have you played Project Zero, Liam?
No, I don't enjoy horror games.
I will tell you something interesting about horror games. Research recently, and from credible sources that I know personally, have just recently confirmed that when you have a fear reaction, you know when usually that fuels adrenaline, say you're about to have an altercation with somebody, someone's been eyeing up your missus at a bar, and you've just said, can you stop looking at me, missus, and making passes at her, and he starts getting all up in your face, and you start to get that fight or flight reaction, but you're fearful because he's bigger than you and he could beat the crap out of you. When you'd usually, you know, you get that in a game as well, if a huge monster is somewhere and it's coming for you, specifically in Amnesia, usually it's been understandable that adrenaline is produced, but what is actually produced is a chemical called cortisol, and they're testing it on games at the moment, because there's a chance, it's not confirmed, there's a chance that games induce this, especially very, very horror game, a lot of horror games apparently produces. But what cortisol does is it's actually a very damaging chemical. It actually starts breaking down, I believe, bones and body organs. It's actually very dangerous. But what's funny is, producing adrenaline fights the cortisol. It's the one cure for cortisol, apparently.
So, by playing a scary game, you are A, killing yourself a little bit, but B, curing the killing yourself.
Now, before you go on a media, you know, sting on it, video games make you violent. It's not confirmed, but it's been proven that fight or flight situations can produce this chemical called cortisol. But they're testing it on games, and there is a small chance it hasn't been confirmed yet. So it's up in air at the moment. But if it's confirmed, or not confirmed. If it's been confirmed, though, then there is a chance that actually playing horror or watching horror films or playing horror games apparently could cause a very slight damage to your own body. But the thing is, producing adrenaline is the simple solution to it, because it actually fights it. It's produced by the one. When you're under particular...
Sorry. There's very few games now which are terrifying. The games being released now, the horror games, are just not.
And the period of terror, really, is not as long, because you'd have to be in quite an extended, you know, period of terror for the cortisol to really... You have to produce a lot of it for it to do a lot of damage. What it does is... let me see what it does. What it does is it suppresses the thyroid, it causes blood sugar imbalances, it decreases your bone density, it decreases muscle tissue, it causes higher blood pressure, it lowers and kind of suppresses your immune system as well, it impairs your cognitive performance, and it increases fat. So it actually increases body fat.
So it destroys you and makes you fat.
It basically tries to destroy this chemical called cortisol, and it's quite frightening. But obviously, it's unconfirmed. Nobody knows. But that hopefully we'll have some research soon. But the thing is, the reason why the research hasn't been done yet is because it's actually really expensive to get the test that confirms the cortisol levels in your body. It's a quick swab test, but because nobody's willing to fund the project to find out the risks, then nobody's done the research to confirm that it exists. But, you know, people are trying to look into it, but it's just about funding, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I could see how that could be hard to fund. I mean, no one's going to want to get scared, like, truly scared for that, are they really?
But yeah.
Like, if someone had a phobia of, like, insects, and they were like, right, we need to test this, so here's a massive, massive vat of insects we're going to pour over you. How would you feel about that?
Yes, and that would cause probably an increase in cortisol levels. But at the end of the day, it's not been fully researched, so don't take it with a grain of salt at the moment. No, not even a pinch of salt, a grain of salt. That's how severe. I don't want to be the one who started another freaking... horror games make you die.
I've already started like an internet campaign. There's petitions, everything.
There's t-shirts.
We've got the backing of several governments.
The parade.
Oh, if you've got all of those masses of resources in the past 5 seconds whilst I explained that, I wonder how the podcast wasn't in on time. I needed that to prove that you didn't have those petitions. Oh, I'm a terrible person. I am so sorry, Liam. I am not coming. This is my cordial goodbye. This is my goodbye, guys. I'm never going to be on this podcast again.
Anyway, so horror games and stuff aside, I think we've been waffling on for a while. What have you guys been playing? Joe, you can start. What have you been playing in the past week that you could talk about in an informative and somewhat distant way?
Well, I haven't really had that much time to play, but I've been playing Retribution, Dawn of War 2 Retribution, because it's just gone 75% off on Steam, what it did do, like, it's like a weekend or something, was it? Or a midweek? And picked it up for a fiver, and I just haven't stopped on that now. It's great. I love it.
I really like Retribution, but I fucking love Last Stand.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
I don't pick Dawn of War 2.
No, you wouldn't,
Dawn
would
of
you?
Dawn of War
1. I love Dawn of War 1 more than, like, the next guy. But Dawn of War 1 doesn't have the Last Stand.
I need to put more time into Dawn of War 2. I need to give it a good chance. Because loads of people like it, so it can't just be me being, you know... It must be just my opinion.
You can get Dawn of War 2 plus both expansions for £7.50 if you jump on Steam now.
I actually have. I just need the other expansion.
Retribution.
Yep.
Five of them. You can get them separately for £5 now, or you can get all three together for £7.50.
That's strange.
Chaos Rising's the best one, in my opinion, for the story, actual single player. So Retribution's single player is a bit... It's quite wanky.
They tried to put Retribution as, like, the answer to Dawn of War 2 to what Dark Crusade was to Dawn of War 1. Like, having all of the factions go against each other.
You can't recreate Dark Crusade. Dark Crusade did it.
That's
right.
What I'm saying is, I think that's you get the feel. That's what they tried to do, but Dark Crusade is just by far the best.
Yeah, it's not a bad time to pick the games up. Like I say, I love The Last Stand. I've got my Chaos Sorcerer, my Space Marine Captain, and the Imperial Guard dude I'm working on. Slowly.
The only part of the franchise I haven't got is Soulstorm because I've heard there's just no point in getting that.
No, there isn't. Just we ignore Soulstorm.
That didn't happen. That wasn't a part.
Wasn't the aerial units in it completely imbalancing the game?
Completely fucking stupid.
Yeah. Well,
you know
they patched it out so that you can actually enjoy Soulstorm now.
I can't enjoy Soulstorm because I still have Dark Crusade.
Yeah.
And whilst I have that, I'm never going to enjoy Soulstorm.
Oh well, to each his own, eh?
I can quite comfortably say that I'll never play any other Dawn of War 1 except from Dark Crusade now.
Have you been playing anything else, Joe? Apart from,
No, not really. A bit more Diablo here and there, but nothing major.
Oh, Diablo.
Yeah. It passes the time well. I'm just gonna say that.
I still need a guest pass for Diablo. Does anyone have a guest pass?
No.
No.
What about you guys? What have you been playing?
Ian, what have you been playing?
All right, since the last podcast, straight away, I teamed up with a friend of mine and had a massive, about 10-hour session on Battlefield 3. I think it was like 8 to 10 hours, I swear. And I got fed up with my constant communication problem with the servers, because I had this weird error where every now and again, people would stop moving, and then it would kick me out of the game. And it would start doing this at least once per server. And then I found out, after doing a lot of rough searching, that I needed to set up a static IP address. A load of jargon. A static IP address. And set up port forwarding on my router to forward all the ports for Battlefield 3. If you need to do it yourself, if you're experiencing this problem with yourself, listeners, just feel free to just go on and search for Battlefield 3 port forwarding and learn how to set up a static IP. It's not too long. If you know a little bit about computers, you can work it out. But since then, I've not had a single disconnect problem, apart from, me being idle whilst I fixed a bunch of laptops. But apart from Battlefield 3, which I have no big updates on, I haven't unlocked anything major. Apart from that, I've been playing, I've been away from my home, so I've been playing handheld things. I've been playing Sonic CD on my Android phone,
CD. I love that game.
I've been playing it on my Android, and I've got through, I played it whilst I was in the queues at Thorpe Park to get on rides. Me being a true gamer, I couldn't, when I was bored and I had to do something but play a game. I massively enjoyed it. The controls are really tight, so if you've got an Android phone for a short fee, it's a couple of quid, you can pick up Sonic CD, a really good game on the Android. And apart from that, I've been playing my DS. I've been picking up Black and White again since some of the big news about Black and White 2 has been out. I've been coerced into picking up Black and White, White version, on my DS again. And I'm now up to Celestial Tower and Route 7. So yeah, I'm doing pretty well. And my Pignite evolved into an Emboar, and my Arcan evolved into an Archaeops, which is pretty sweet. So I can't wait to start flying around everywhere because I finally got a Pokemon with Fly.
My emboss called Big Bacon. We thought we should know.
My Big Teeny, which I got from the mystery gift when it came out, when Black and White came out, it's called Big Tony after a bartender in Wetherspoons in Stafford. I don't know why, but Big Tony rhymes with Vic Teeny. It's kind of weird, but I just named it for fun. So if you're listening, Big Tony in Wetherspoons, you've been honored in Pokemon form. Well, I doubt he's ever going to listen to this, but maybe one day he might. Apart from that, nothing else, because I've only just recently got back. I think I played a little bit of Castle Crashers since then, and finally finished it. Oh yes, I have. I've played through Castle Crashers and finally finished it, and I really, really enjoyed it.
I love Castle Crashers. It's great.
I played it co-op with my girlfriend, who has a level 83 character on it. She's mental for Castle Crashers. She loves the game. And I put all my points in strength, so basically I was doing massive DPS, but couldn't survive about 3 hits. So it was pretty fun. It turned into pretty much a bullet hell game, trying to dodge all of the little bastards running around on the screen. But yeah, apart from that, that's it. Liam, you go! Let us know what you've been playing.
It's been a really, really good week for gaming for me. I did something I've not done in a very, very long time. Oh.
Cue drum roll. Cue very suspenseful music.
My copy of Super Mario Sunshine showed up the other day.
Have you been playing Super Mario Sunshine?
Well, it showed up, and it showed up on Tuesday, and I was like, well, I've done all my work for the day. It was one of those rare days where I had the whole day in front of me with nothing to do.
I love those days when you just know what to play, and you have all the time in the world to play it.
Well, I said to myself, I'm going to sit down, and I'm going to finish Super Mario Sunshine before the end of the day, have proper nice long gaming session.
Nice.
So I made myself a big bowl of nachos, grabbed a couple bottles of Lucozade, grabbed a sleeping bag, a load of cushions, and I sat down in the living room and played Super Mario Sunshine start to finish.
That's gaming at its finest, really.
Yeah.
And it took me 12 hours, and I've never been so happy with a purchase in my life.
If you want to comment on the podcast and give your favourite gaming moment, or like Liam's, feel free to let us know.
Yeah, that'd be great.
What's your ideal gaming setup? What's your ideal gaming day? That's what we want. What's yours?
Well,
yours, Joe.
Yeah, Joe.
I don't know. Just playing games. I don't mind where I play games, what I play. It's just as long as I'm playing games, that's fine. I really don't care.
What's your fondest memory of an entire day of gaming? What did you get up to? What did you eat? How were you?
I used to spend a lot of time on Halo. Halo 2 was the big one. I think I spent like an entire weekend like with like 3 hours sleep a night just purely solidly playing Halo.
Those were the good days back in Halo 2.
Oh, Halo 2.
Online. I used to put so many hours into just playing Halo 2 online. I can feel you with that one.
Yeah, they should remake Halo 2.
Yeah, they should actually. They should actually just, like, it should be the Xbox's version of the HD collection on the PS3.
Exactly, yeah. Like the Anniversary, but just with Halo 2.
Yeah, just have Halo Anniversary, just put that in there as a bundle, and then put a remake of Halo 2, and then put Halo 3 in a HD collection.
That would work.
There. And then you can play the first 3 major games of the franchise.
Oh, the amount of gaming I'd have then. Oh, I'm just imagining it now.
I remember when Halo 3 came out, and especially when the beta was out, and I just constantly played it.
Yeah,
I played it so much, it red-ringed my console. I was one of them unfortunate first-time ringers that got...
I think I bought Crackdown just for the Halo 3 beta.
Yeah, that's the same with me, but I actually enjoyed Crackdown as a game. I was massively disappointed by Crackdown 2's outcome and subsequently Real-Time Worlds being shut down. It was such a shame because they were really good.
Yeah, Crackdown 1 wasn't bad. I never played number 2.
Yeah. If they'd have made number 2 good, and it then they would have been fine. But
I think that's the only way you can describe Crackdown 2. If only they'd made it good.
They'd made it good. It'd be good.
Well, the expectation of gamers is high. All right. My fondest memory of gaming was back in the days of when I used to get home from. I used to get home because I had it back in high school. This was a good many years ago when it was first initially out on the Xbox. And I got it off a friend, and I used to just come in from school, and I just used to ignore the entire universe and my entire homework that was stacking up and piling up slowly, and play Oblivion and become massively immersed in the world. And since then, I've been an Elder Scrolls fan ever since. So thanks, Bethesda. You've given me a good drive to, and it's one of the main reasons I got into game design and development. So I have Bethesda to thank for that. So Todd Howard, thanks for Oblivion.
It's making me think, like, back to high school days and stuff when I just get back in and then I would just sit there and play games until 10 or 11 or 12 at night and just don't have the time to do it.
And then when you did, you'd bring out your Game Boy Advance SP and play it under the covers. In my game.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons I've got such an on-again-off-again relationship with World of Warcraft. So I don't have a lot of time for gaming anymore, so I don't like sitting down and playing a JRPG, because I know I might not get another chance to play through a hefty amount of it for, say, another 2 weeks. And I don't want to miss parts of the story and things. With WoW, I can just jump online, do a quick couple of dungeons, and then forget about it for a month or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't need to be as involved or as focused.
Yeah, it's one of them games you can just play whenever, you know.
Yeah, I can do it in little bits. I'm already like at the end game content.
I imagine
so.
Things get quite demanding because of the whole guild raids and what.
I'm not in a guild.
Ah. Apparently, you're missing out on half of what World of Warcraft is for.
Yeah, or I'm missing out on having to do. I'm missing out on making something I play in my spare time a job.
Yeah, that's.
Which is why I quit.
That's a good way of thinking. Guilds. Making what you usually play in a spare time a job.
You need to be online 3 nights a week so we can practice, and we need to do this much progression this week, and we need to. Got to be there at the exact time every single week.
Let me confirm this.
I have a life. Screw you.
Really?
I have a life, and you know
it. Let me confirm that. Chaz. Guilds. If, without them, you'd usually play World of Warcraft in your spare time, but with them, World of Warcraft becomes a job. I've got laughing. Oh, depends how hardcore the guild is. Chaz used to have, my girlfriend used to have to raid 3 nights a week with her guild for several hours. Used to what do we call it? Used to lie about going to bed, and then you'd get up and play it, wouldn't you? Did you get that?
No,
we didn't.
She used to have to pretend to go to sleep and then get up at about 2 a.m. and raid away.
I think that's the point at which commitment becomes obsession.
Yeah. Oh, did you hear that, Chaz? That's the point where commitment becomes obsession. She's not playing anymore. She's been rehabilitated into society and IRL. She's playing the IRL MMO now.
I heard they just upgraded the texture quality on that.
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah, you got to download the latest.
It's currently
patch.
Got the global warming bug going on that they haven't been managing to fix, though.
Yeah, and players crash the economy again.
Yeah, the in-game player economy keeps crashing. That's kind of fun. Anyhow.
Need to see some better hotfixes. They keep telling me to reboot my game, but I don't want to lose my character.
Back to what you were playing, Liam, after our massive sidetrack.
Well, because of the Pyromania update, I decided to jump back on Team Fortress 2.
Yeah. Well, we've already
been having a lot of fun playing the economy on that. Especially when I found out that some of the old items I've got are worth a lot of in-game equivalent of money. Otherwise known as metal. If anyone else plays TF2, it's like, I've got earbuds, I've got summer shades, I have a team captain, genuine Shogun sets and things, and I found out that apparently those are worth things now. I remember them being worth shit all. I remember when buds were worth 3 refined. And now they're worth 30. I was like, well, I could sell these for money if I wanted to. But then I wouldn't have my earbuds to shove in people's faces and look what I've got!
Are the vintage weapons worth a lot of in-game metal?
Vintage weapons aren't worth a lot, but vintage hats are.
Oh, I think I have a few.
I have two vintage hats, the Prussian Preckelhaube and the Fancy Fedora, which are two of the best hats from when hats were first released. Demo Man's Throne notwithstanding.
I think that about wraps it up, doesn't it, for what we've been playing?
Actually, no, I've been playing Tribes Ascend lot lately as well, because it's come back on Steam.
Oh yeah, that's back. Yeah, that's on Steam at last. That's going to kick a bit of life back
Oh,
into
make
it.
sure to add me. My username is Terra Towers, and now all the podcast listeners might just add me.
Mine's Mr. Etc.
Mr. ETC?
No, Mr. MISTER.
No one cares.
ETC, ETERO. I decided to make it unnecessarily long, and I'm not sure why.
Well, if you add me when you get the chance, it's Terra
Yeah,
Towers.
we'll do. Yeah.
My other account is 2 visits. I have one under Telltale, one under Trevor. I have a lot of
Need
tribes
a lot
accounts.
of I do need a lot of new friends, because the only one I've got at the moment is my bro and my girlfriend.
I'm not 100% sure if I'm going to be playing a lot of it now that it's on Steam. I want to see what happens, because they lost a lot of players really quickly and they've been churning out updates to try and get people
Yeah, it
back.
did seem like it added a bit of a boost to the community, but not by much.
Yes, when we were playing back in May, it was just before the first update came out. No, it was just after the first update, wasn't it? And they're now on 1.6.
Well,
Like they've just updated 5 classes in a month.
they've got the starter pack, because they've been on Steam. You can get the starter pack, which gives you a 50% permanent XP boost to your account.
You don't need to
You
get that.
don't necessarily need to get it, but it gives you.
No, it's just the normal VIP stuff. It's you may as well pay less for in-game gold.
True.
So I already have a VIP bonus, so I'm not that
The
bothered.
gold's worth a lot more than the experience.
Yeah. Well, if you're one of the people listeners that likes pay to win on these kind of games, especially Tribes Ascend, check out the starter pack on Steam, because that released alongside the Steam version of Tribes.
Yeah, it's just the normal version of Tribes.
Yeah, it's got the Steam overlay.
Yeah, it's got Steam overlay and it has the accessibility.
But if you
I think that's what's
won't
important.
use Steam overlay anyway.
To its credit, though, I mean, being a free-to-play game, that's how they make their money, isn't it? Doing all these extra content.
Yeah, they've got to make sales, to support themselves.
Exactly.
Because I mean, if gamers don't.
I have no problem with the business model. It's not. It lost a lot of players very
That's where
quickly.
you stand as a consumer. People pay for them. It's like maps in Modern Warfare. People pay for them.
I've bought stuff from tribes. I paid for a good chunk of gold so that I could get some weapon unlocks.
Yeah,
Me too.
I got.
So I've bought stuff in TF2 as well. I'm happy to support a game if I'm enjoying
Yeah,
it,
and if available.
but when the servers started emptying out, I stopped enjoying Tribes. I got really, really annoyed, especially with one game where the numbers in our server kept dropping, and then at the end of the game, instead of like just starting a new game for us, it physically took everyone on the server and merged us with another server that was already halfway through a game. And just to piss me off, it was on the same fucking map. And then, people started quitting, and the same thing happened. They were running out of people on the server, so they just started slamming them together. That's a pretty evident sign that there's less people playing, in my opinion.
So, has anyone been playing anything else?
Ooh, I've played Super Smash Bros. Melee and Mario Kart Double Dash. Basically, I've been playing GameCube games all week.
On your Wii, right? Or on a GameCube?
On my
All right.
GameCube. If you follow my Twitter, I've been posting pictures of it whilst it's been happening, and there's one person pointed out they are super jealous of me because I have two GameCubes.
Did you?
But I don't own.
Did you find a post-it note in one of them? I'm sure we put a post-it note in
yes.
one of them.
Yes, you put a post-it note in one of my GameCube saying, "No GameCube for you." I threw it away and started playing Super Mario Sunshine.
Liar.
No, I didn't play it at all. I'm just going to get the pictures from my Twitter feed now. I'm desperate to prove you wrong that badly.
Just so that your electronic ego isn't harmed.
My e-penis needs to be huge.
Yes. Just to reaffirm your e-penis size. Anyhow, is the cover? I'll take that silence as a no.
I didn't hear.
I didn't catch that.
Anything else to cover?
Anything else to cover?
Yeah.
I think we're out of game stuff, but we do have the question thing.
The question thing?
What's the question thing?
Well, we've been getting questions off the audience. Last week we had three. This week we've had one.
Oh, what's the big question?
Yeah, it was a big enough question that's been asked on the segment next page. So before we answer it, we're going to read out some of your answers. Because we're that nice. Is it nice? I don't know.
Okay. Give us the question.
Do-do-do. If you could design a perfect game, what kind of game would you make? And we've had a lot of feedback for this. Pick your favourites, guys. Jake Staples, an old school RPG with proper stat allocation, large talent trees, written by BioWare, not the current EA raped BioWare. So I'm assuming they're talking about KOTOR,
yeah.
Jade Empire days. Ooh, there's another game I've been playing. I've started a master run on Jade Empire. Back to what we're doing. Graphics by Crytek. Game engine made by id Software. Massive depth to your choices like The Witcher and the breadth of a game like Skyrim.
That exactly sums up why there can't be a game like that, is because it takes the ideas of so many studios, it just would not work.
Yeah, you need a collaboration of every single major studio.
Yeah.
And even then, people ain't going to like it. Because it's an RPG, and there are so many people that prefer FPSs, etc.
You have to have people that don't like it for people to like it, too.
Yeah, you can't have that much effort put into one game, really, can you, unfortunately?
Like, if it was up to me, I'd love a game of Pokemon RPG where you actually physically walk around in an MMO style. And when you come across other players, you can battle them and trade and all that, and actually, like, in the same environment at the same time.
I'd love a Pokemon game like Skyrim, where you can actually walk into long grass and see wild Pokemon.
Yeah, something like that.
Proper open world stuff.
I'm going to be a bastard. And I imagine people are kind of wondering what my answer to this has been, you know, part of a development and studying it for quite a while. But if I were to develop a game, I'll answer it personally and kind of professionally. Professionally, I'd have a game that is accessible by as many audiences as possible, as in people can learn how to play it by just picking up the controller. It'd have a narrative that is powerful and constantly driven by the game itself. It'd have a world that, whenever you sit down to play it, would bring something new to your experience so that you'd enjoy it. And it would also have a brilliant challenge to it that isn't, you know, defeating, completely, you know, trying to defeat you like a Dark Souls game, maybe, but would still challenge your skills. And I off the top of my head, I can't remember a couple of other good things that go into a game, but I try to appease a lot of audiences. But most interestingly, I would love to design a game that has as much consumer control over decisions and implementations of, you know, features and things that as possible. So in other words, a game that is tested almost as much as it was in development time. And personally, I would, if I was to design a game that for me, that I would want that would be the most ultimately designed game in the world. For my own enjoyment, I would gladly make an Elder Scrolls game that covers all of the regions, has all of the most awesome features from Morrowind, Oblivion, even going back to Daggerfall and Arena, and would, you know, have Skyrim's kind of engine regularly updated. It'd be cooperative gameplay, but it would be the fun kind of co-op and not the shitty one like Fable 3. So it'd have all of that good stuff. So essentially, it'd be an Elder Scrolls MMO. And look, it's on its way. So I guess I'm going to have to really check out the MMO. But yeah, sorry for my long-winded answer.
Some other answers from the audience. You say Daniel Romero, a video game where aliens take over the planet and you with a few survivors on an all-out battle for survival. There are different types of aliens, such as brute suicide insects, etc. Lots of blood and gore with the capability to make your own characters and gun as desired. So, a decent sci-fi survival game with a big focus on character creation. That sounds really cool.
Yeah, you can see it happening.
I like RPGs and survival games with a really, really good character creator because you can. It's easier to put some. It's easier to get into a game if you're. I'm sure people know what I'm talking about, but I don't know how to say it in English words. I don't know how to say it in words at all.
Got me here.
Another answer.
Great thing for a podcast.
I'll chime in with another kind of lovely game I'd love to design. I'd love to design a game that molds its entire feature and story around how you play it. In other words, say in Skyrim, if you're an archer, you'll start getting quest lines based on how you behave as an archer. Or if you're a mage, you start getting quest lines based on your mage. And I know there's the Mage's Guild, and there's the Fighter's Guild. That's from Oblivion, so it's essentially Stormcloaks and Imperials in Skyrim. But I'd love to have, so that you don't have to go out of your way to find your own quests and things. I'd love it if the game molded itself, obviously, around how you played it. And it react, like if you were playing a shooter, and you were going through a mission, and then you were very reservist with the ammunition and you made a lot of stealth kills, the next mission would challenge your stealth abilities by making a lot more complex situations to try and stealth around and would give you more opportunities to be stealthy. So it would give you more dark shadows and dark corners to hide in. Stuff like that. Or if you were gunned down all the enemies and wasted all the ammunition, perhaps it will challenge you with more enemies and less ammunition next time. But in more than enough to kill them, but a little bit less ammunition so that you don't go gung-ho crazy, but, you know, so that it challenges you to pick your shots right and get headshots and whatnot. That's a kind of idea.
Reactive gameplay.
That was actually the word I called it. But also, I would design a game like that that would never end. The problem with that is it would be too big and it would have too many variables in it. But it is possible, and Skyrim has done it with the Radiant questline system. But the problem is, I've experienced a little bit of the Radiant questline givers, where they give you quests, and they are a little bit repetitive.
Quite repetitive.
Yes. So it's a little bit unfortunate, and that was a little bit of a disappointment for me. But, you know, Skyrim is a huge game, and trying to fit something like a never-ending storyline in it, you know, trying to fit that into the development time of the main quest line and everything, and also trying to fit it into such a massive game with, you know, so much art in it, you know, there's not much space in there. And I mean, they did their best, and it's a lot better than Oblivion's repetitive quests that keep cropping up. So it's improving, which is good. As long as it's improving over time and we're not going backwards, then gaming is going forwards, which is what I love to see. So what I definitely love to design is a game that molds itself around you and does its best as possible to never end, whilst not becoming boring and repetitive.
And with that, we're going to read another answer from the audience.
I'll shut up for a good 5 minutes.
Louis Philip Pope, who appears to be a man after my own heart. That sounds really
yep.
gay. Shut up.
Please feel free.
I'm going to tell you.
Love for this man.
No. I'm going to tell you what I want. A medieval war siege game with lots of soldiers, placeable units, like Medieval 2 Total War. But when it comes to the actual battle, you get to be in the battlefield, an archer firing from a tower, or something like that.
Yeah.
Now, why this is... This is where my perfect game comes in. I don't imagine... I love 4X games. I love sci-fi. Anyone who's listened to the past couple of episodes will know that by now. I'd love a huge scale sci-fi 4X game. And there goes the doorbell. Awkward. Right, no one's in, so I need
no,
to answer
don't.
The door. BRB, we'll edit this.
I'd love to design a game.
So you're bored of that. You know what I miss? Adaptive difficulty. I first saw it in LEGO Star Wars and I thought that was great, but they didn't put it in enough games anymore.
Yeah. I tell you what I'd love to design a game. The Firefly game.
That would be incredible.
I'm going to put that in the podcast when it comes back.
Yes, just yes.
Yes.
Yes to all.
You would play the Firefire game even if it's shit.
Yeah, definitely. Like it even if it was shit.
And Nathan, Fillion, and everyone would be on board. Do you remember when there was a big while ago for help Nathan Fillion buy Firefly?
Yeah.
And, like, loads of people and actors got on board and they were just like, oh, do it again.
But the thing is, though, that'd never die, because you could continuously play Firefly or watch, like, it'd be like watching an episode of Firefly in a game continuously. So, you know, no matter if they cut like a series like they did last time or whatever, that wouldn't happen because you just play the game continuously.
Liam,
have
you just got back?
Yeah.
Liam, we've just had a runoff. Feel free to edit this. This what I'm about to tell you out, but we've just had a runoff of I'd love to design the Firefly game.
It'd be amazing.
I'll have to listen to it.
It'd be either good as a Skyrim style RPG, but obviously instead of fantasy being a sci-fi setting.
I'll whack it, right, tell you what, I'll cut it out and I'll whack it on the end.
Yeah, yeah.
So the people can listen to it. Anyway, shall we go back to where we were?
Yeah, go on.
Yeah?
I'm running out of time.
Okay,
so.
shall we
All right, yeah, sure.
So, 4X game.
Go through just a bunch of them.
So, I want to design a sci-fi 4X game that's bigger than 4X. I want 5Xs. And the 5th X is for extravagant. I imagine it being a planetary system 4X game. You fly... Well, you move between planets, you build up your area of influence... And when your area of influence and another enemy's influence area clash over a planet, you go to the diplomacy options first. They're always there. It comes up, and you have to talk with the captain of the ship or whatever, attempt to negotiate for the planet, say if you own it, or try and get them to leave peacefully. And then if that doesn't work, you go into all-out war above the above the planet in space. You have and I imagine that battle would be RTS style.
That'd be awesome.
Mm.
But once that battle's over, the fight for the planet isn't. At the end of the battle, you get another pop-up, and if you win, you can say, right, we're giving you a chance, you can leave now, or you can tell them you're going to cut them down, or whatever. If they've got enough forces, it goes to a ground battle. And then the ground battle, you play it as an FPS running around with your military as a captain or something.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you have to actually defend an area and then you can run into a building which will give you an isometric view of the battlefield. So it'll look like an RTS, but instead of controlling it, you can from there get a better idea of what's happening and you can give out orders to other units. But then you need to run back out and join the fray again.
How about that? With a lot of influence from Freelancer thrown in there.
Yeah, there needs to be a lot of trading in it as well. It needs to be the kind of game where you're going to be invested in it for a very long time.
Kind of reminds me
So, yeah, 4x isn't good enough. I need a 5x.
Yeah, it'll need to combine anything. I think the multiplayer on that kind of game would be great, but you'd have to be able to drop in and out of it like as and when.
Yeah. Otherwise, it'll turn into like even bigger than raiding commitment.
Yeah.
The kind of scale I imagine it on anyway, you should be able... The game should have inbuilt AIs that you can tell to manage planets for you whilst you're busy doing other things. Like I say, I imagine this on a massive scale. But the thing is, it doesn't need that much space behind it because the actual space map doesn't need to be that well developed. It just needs to look good enough. And then each planet just needs to be a sphere and then a small map. And you're only looking at 16 to 50 maps in a game. Which sounds like a lot when I say it like that.
Yeah, but still, like, you can make the game last just as, like, you can stretch it out as long as you want.
Yeah. If you have AIs to manage stuff for you, then you can have drop-in and out multiplayer. Shall we tie this up with another answer from the audience? Casey Rogers. I would go down more the route of what a lot of Naughty Dog puts out. Uncharted, Jak and Daxter, Crash Bandicoot. So, actually, I don't understand this answer at all. I'm sorry, Casey. Let's try someone else. The ultimate space exploration settler game, a kind of mix of EVE Online and Civ 5.
That sounds kind of cool.
Yeah, I like that idea.
If you want to play a planet exploration game like Civ 5 and you're willing to play a classic, play a game called Alpha Centauri. Or Centauri, how you like to pronounce it.
Alpha Centauri.
Yeah. It's a a really, really, really good Civ style-ish game based on planet exploration. And it has the idea that everyone's left planet Earth and has gone to Alpha Centauri. Which is this new Earth we've found, and we've recolonized it, and there's different factions. Check it out. It's worth a look.
If you've got any questions, feel free to tweet them at us, yell them at us on the Facebook page, whatever, comment on the articles. If you've got questions that you want read out on the podcast, ask us. We will read them out. We will answer them. Cool. The best question will get asked on the Facebook page itself, and that's how we will get your answers to read out.
We might even lick them.
Tasty. Right, with that, I think we're going to have to end the podcast.
Yep. Call it.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I think this has gone on pretty long.
How long has it? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Just before we go, I'd like to say thank you to everyone who's listened so far, because we hit top 10 video game podcasts in Podomatic a few days ago.
We did?
Yeah, we've been doing really well.
Absolutely brilliant. Thank you very much to all the listeners, and please, please do...
Listens and downloads have spiked. Our rankings got really good really fast. Yeah. So yeah, thanks
for
listening.
Thank you for committed to XP Grind Podcast. Please, please keep looking for updates. We're very sorry about this one being late. It's not my fault, it's Liam's.
It's not my fault. It's the internet's.
Oh, no. You know what happens when you blame the internet. The internet comes back at you full force.
We're going to end this on a funny story, right? Right. You'll love this, Ian.
Oh, God.
Now, back when I used to run my own LAN center, we were in the middle of Milan, and I mentioned to someone, you know, there's a building in California with the entire internet archive on it. So, technically, that building's the internet, and I'd love to go to California and punch it, just so I could say I've punched the internet.
You punched the thing that houses the internet.
I'd love to say I've punched the internet, and I think that's as close as I'm
Is
going to get.
Is that where they keep the Wayback Machine? Wayback Machine.
This is where it gets funny, right? So we go back to Lanning after a while, and I'm sat in my big desk chair. We're in the middle of a game of COD 2, sniping and running around. And then the server cuts out and everyone hears this crash. Now, my desk was located a bit away from the actual LAN desks. so that I could keep an eye on the server and whatnot. So everyone's wondering, why's the game gone, etc. I was hosting. What happened was my chair snapped, and I fell backwards and kicked the wires out of my computer. But the router that we used to get internet access to the switches was also right behind my chair. So I've fallen backwards, and I've looked up from my back going, the fuck just happened? And this really big router falls down, hits me straight in the face. The internet, preemptive strike. It heard me talking.
See, this is what happens when you fuck with the internet, Liam.
And it's somehow
yeah,
new.
I can't go and punch the internet because I'm afraid of what might happen. It knows.
That is great. You know, that's my new favourite story now.
The time Liam talked about punching the internet and got punched.
By the internet.
I guess, and with that, we're finishing. Thanks very much again for listening in on the XP Grind podcast, guys.
Yeah, awesome. Cheers.
Yeah, thanks for coming in.
Yeah.
You're the reason that we're keeping this
thanks
going.
Thanks especially to the host, Liam, for keeping sleepless nights trying to organise it and constantly changing the schedule of who's on it and frantically trying to search through Skype and Steam to try and find people to appear on it.
Yeah, well, hopefully next week's episode will be on time and it won't. We won't have really, really, really bad issues.
Yeah, once again, we're massively
publishing day. Right, okay, with that, I need to end this because I've got to go. Thanks for listening again, guys. This, you know me by now. I'm fairly sure you know Ian. You can also say goodbye
bye.
To Joe. Say bye,
bye,
Joe.
See you, everyone. See you next week.
See That's you whenever.
Bomb on!
That's so
wrong. You didn't, you?